philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians, lurking conservatives, people who are expecting somebody else. Good evening to you, too. I am Mark Maron. This is my show. That voice you heard earlier there was Jim Earl.
Hey.
Hey, you're misreading them, Jim. I'm not big and blonde. I'm sort of stocky and about 6 foot, kind of Jewy looking with a beard and long hair, but I appreciate you elevating me to big and blonde. No, I appreciate that.
I was thinking of Otis Chandler.
Yeah, you know what I did? You know what I did? I don't even know who that is. You know, I have to listen better. I don't even know who Otis Chandler is. Who is Otis Chandler?
One of the greatest newspaper entrepreneurs in history.
Oh, my
just
God.
Just died.
I'm sorry, man.
Los Angeles Times. Chandler family.
I wish I knew that. I just hear the sound of Clippers fans changing the channel. Stay right there, because if I'm going to learn how to love basketball, you're going to learn how to love me. How's that for a deal? Is that a good enough deal? Because I'll do it. I'm sitting out there. I'm listening to the Clippers commentary. I don't understand much of it, but I'm going to learn to love sports, Jim. That's my plan. By the time I'm 50, I'm going to become a sports guy. Is that all right?
Your nickname is Hoops.
All right. That's good. Hoops Marin. I'll take that. I'll take Hoops Marin. You know what? I was coming over here. I don't know the valley that well. We're up here in the elevated bunker here at the Clear Channel Radio Mill, the fortress overlooking the lovely NBC studios where real show business is made. And you know, I'm driving up and down the street. I've never been any place in this country where you can't find a Starbucks within a 50-yard radius. I drove all the way down Olive looking for a Starbucks, and I entered some sort of no man's land, and I went into sort of a panic because I had made the choice to go at Starbucks tonight, as you can tell by the tenor and pace of my voice, Jim. Yesterday, I went with just a regular old coffee shop coffee. I was even-tempered. Nope, tonight it was Starbucks and Raisinets, and I'm jacked. Do you understand? I'm too jacked for Wednesday. Is it Wednesday? Please tell me it's Wednesday.
It's the first.
Okay, it's the first. Oh, we made it through another month. God, that's terrific. Look, folks, I got a lot of stuff I want to talk about. I'm gonna keep it kind of sprite and exciting and kind of, you know, lighthearted here at the beginning. But man, what a thing happened today with this video. A video of a briefing of federal officials, including failed former FEMA chief Michael Brown and New Orleans Governor Kathleen Blanco, talking about the pending possible devastation that Katrina could reap on New Orleans, found its way to the AP, Newsweek, and congressional investigators today. Yesterday, just out of nowhere, they said this thing didn't exist, and the clips of it are devastating, and I'm going to talk about it in a minute. But first, let's get to some other news. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. President Bush arrived in India today and was greeted by thousands of angry protesters. Republicans played down the protests, blaming them on whiny Bollywood liberals. Bollywood liberals.
Bollywood.
Yeah. Saddam Hussein was back in court today asking the judge, where's the crime? Referring to the 148 Shiites he is on trial for having executed. Saddam admitted that he ordered the trial of the Shiites, but denied that he approved of their eventual executions. Moments later, after evidence of his signature was shown, Hussein called it a forgery, noting that he always dots his I's with smiley faces. That's good. So the music just kind of comes in the middle. That's right if it comes in the middle.
Yeah, sure.
Kind of surprised me, didn't it?
I should have done something on
me. I already committed that the music wasn't going to come in, and there it is, right in the middle of everything. Screwing up the best joke on the piece of paper. That's what I'll tell you, Jim. According to a new study, only 1 in 4 Americans can name more than one of the 5 freedoms guaranteed by the First Amendment. In contrast, more than half can name at least 2 members of The Simpsons. After reading the survey, Fox TV canceled their new drama based on all the amendments called 24 plus 3. It's an amendments joke, man. It's an amendments joke. Oh, you know, a lot of people out there who are familiar with our work from the Morning Sedition program that used to air here. I imagine some of the people that used to listen to Morning Sedition when it aired here at 3 in the morning are probably some of the same listeners we have now. You know, insomniacs, speed freaks, very committed liberal progressives who just got to keep hearing stuff. And they don't know a lot of the new crew. So, you know, we've got Jason the Jew from Wisconsin on the knobs over there. Nice to see you. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's a real honor working with you.
Oh, well, that's very nice of you to say. That'll dissipate after a few weeks, and you'll become your own personality, and you'll start to resent me, and that'll become apparent on the air. I'm looking forward to that.
He stole that from me. I said that last night.
You did?
Yeah. I said it was an honor.
No, yeah, but I know that you hate me. I know that deep inside of you, Jim Earl, that you have a resentment towards me.
It's an honor to resent you.
Oh, well, I can understand. Did you know there were Jews in Wisconsin? Isn't that unbelievable?
Yes.
They spread. They did. I'm a Jew, but my parents parents, they stuck with the East Coast, but I ended up in New Mexico, which a lot of people say to me, Jews in New Mexico, how the hell did that happen?
See, that seems even more bizarre to me.
Yeah, but my parents were of the first generation of Jews to move as far away from their parents as possible. It wasn't the same generation that came with your family, which I think went back a few generations, isn't that right?
I believe so.
All right, there you go. And out on the phone, if you're going to call us here at Progressive Talk, which you can, but unfortunately, folks, we had a lot of people streaming last night. I was so impressed and amazed with the wonderful listeners that we sort of accumulated from Morning Sedition, from working in the middle of the night and also being on the East Coast. There were 350 blog entries on a website that was built.
I read them.
Yeah, every one of them, just to see if they liked you. Come on, be honest.
Gypsy's got some great recipes.
She does. And most of them are vegetarian.
Yes.
Well, anyways, now we're losing people that don't know. There is a couple of websites. There was a website built in honor of the program that we had that was on, I guess, later. It would have been later tonight at 3 in the morning, Morning Sedition. The MorningSeditionist.com have created this beautiful blog and website dedicated to, the momentum that we had on Morning Sedition getting us to this show. And they blogged like 350. They were up all night, and they were trying to call. The number here is 877-520-1150. You cannot call from outside the Los Angeles area. I am sorry. We're going to work on that. If you want to get onto the current blog situation, you can go to markmaron.com. That's MarkMaron.com. You are listening to Progressive Talk AM 50. That's what I wanted to let you know. And I'm sorry that we can't entertain all the calls from all around the world, because, I got fans in Finland, baby. I'm big in Finland.
In Holland.
Yeah, in Holland as well. Japan, we've got people. You know why I'm big in Finland?
You like the Finn? I don't know. I can't make a joke about Finland.
Because I've been on Conan O'Brien so many damn times.
Oh, they love him there.
With so many different haircuts. And he's like a god to the Finns. Yeah. I don't know why, but he is. And I get email from people with very complicated names in Finland saying, we love you in Finland. Why don't you come to Finland? We'd love to have you in Finland. You can perform at my house. That's what they offer me.
Let's do a live show there.
You want to,
Finland.
We're going to Finland. So you want to bum everybody out with the heart? I'm not going to talk like that, because the truth of the matter is this stuff affects me. It affects me in the way that when this administration, the neocon death cult, as I like to call them, reveals itself for what they are, I find it so mind-blowing. I'm a broad stroke guy. I listen to the network all day long today. I listen to people. I listen to Randy. Oh, by the way, the HBO Left of the Dial, the documentary on the beginnings of Air America Radio, is now available on DVD. And I want to tell you, Randy Rhodes and myself did the commentaries. Is that what you call it? The DVD commentary, the live commentary? So it's like 2 hours of me and Randy in a booth, and it's basically Randy talking and me going, oh, come on, Randy, really? Oh, don't say, really? Don't say, you're going to say that about him? No one even knows. Oh, Randy, why do you get, oh, man, we're in trouble. It's about 2 hours of that, but I think I got a couple of lines in there. Anyways, it's out there, it's available, and HBO, this is why I think I've got to watch it again, because to be honest with you, I have not watched it. I have not watched HBO Left of the Dial, the DVD, with my commentary on it, because it frightens me. Because the way I figure it, it's in the box. There's nothing I can do now. I don't even like watching my own TV appearances, because it's done. I'll just wait and see what other people say about it, and then maybe I'll watch it in 6 months when I can process it. All right? So I'm afraid, because HBO sent me a copy of it, but they also sent me the fourth season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, the last season of The Sopranos. They sent me like 3 movies and a portable DVD player, which to me, it seems nice. It could be a thank you, or it could be, I hope this makes up for the fool that you made out of yourself gift pack. Could it be that, or am I being paranoid? I probably am being paranoid. So let's get on to this, now that we have no time to do it effectively, because we got, David Poland's going to be out here in a little while to dish some dirt on the big business of show. I'm very excited to have him. And but look, I'm going to get into this a bit, and we'll talk about it throughout the show. A videotape of a briefing. This is a briefing that had Michael Brown. That was the failed FEMA chief. It had New Orleans Governor Kathleen Blanco, a lot of federal officials. It was a day before. This is a tape of a briefing they had. Okay, the stuff on this tape is not only eye opening, folks. It's terrifying, and you can see it. It's online in many different places. This meeting took place on Sunday, August 28th, a day after Federal emergency was declared, and the Department of Homeland Security and FEMA were given full authority to respond to whatever's necessary, that in light of what was coming, which was Katrina. The meeting took place a day before the 17th Street levee breached. Now, in this video, big dumb Michael Brown is sitting there. This is a day before the levee goes. They know it's coming. Big dumb Michael Brown is sitting there, and he's saying, this could be the bad one. This could be the big one. A day before, all right? Never mind the Army Corps of Engineers knew back in 2004 that they needed more federal funding to really secure those levees. A day before the city drowns, all right, Michael Brown is all of a sudden worried. He's a little stressed out. But the real clincher here is that they pipe in W the Doofus King. They pipe him into the room via video conference, and he is briefed, my friends. He is alerted, he is warned, and he is asked for help. In other words, he is told that this is it, man. This storm, Katrina, will most likely drown the city of New Orleans. A problem that should have been taken care of years ago, okay? In response, okay, the thing is that he responded. Now, I'm going to play that response for you in just a second. But already, the Republicans are trying to spin this. They're trying to spin it as like, well, all this proves is that the president was on point. He was engaged. He was informed. But in a couple minutes, I'm going to reveal to you, he was informed. He was engaged. He did know exactly what was going to happen. He knew what the possibilities were. He knew what was coming down the pike. And 4 days later, he lied. He denied it, and he is caught in a bigger way than I have not seen lately with his pants down. Now, given the fact that his approval ratings are around 34%, if this doesn't knock his approval ratings to almost non-existent, to at least that of Cheney's, I will be surprised, because this made me so mad, so disappointed. Great music to come back to. Yeah, this is what's great about this show, is no matter how serious I get, that music is going to say, hey man, lighten up, because we got fun coming. I'm going to play the George Bush sound for you in just a second, so stay with us. You're listening to The Mark Maron Show.
Mark Maron.
I did that twice. Thank you, Jim. We're live on Progressive Talk AM 1150. We're streaming at markmaron.com. That's MARCMARON.com. Call us, my friends. Paul Asplund, the gentle giant out there on the phone, will take your call. Be nice to him. He's a nice man. You say, hello, Paul. I'd like to speak to Mark. And he'll go, what about? And you tell him, 877-520-1150. Do that. You can't call if you're in Sweden or Finland. As much as I know you'd like to call, you can't call from here, from there, all right? Because it's just a local number. I don't know why, all right? But it'll change. We're working on that. We got a guy out there on a scaffold right now working on it. Our guest right now, oh, by the way, I know I set up a very exciting reveal for you people before we went on that 19-minute break, but I'm going to tell you what Bush said, and I'm going to show you how he lied in just a few minutes. Hang tight, and don't think that I was trumped by the news forecast, all right? By the broadcast of the news there, where they played some news about the stuff I was talking about, because they played different little clips of the president than I've got, all right? And even if you've heard these things, I'll present it to you in a different way. So if that is not enough to keep you up, or to at least put one more line down on the mirror, then I don't know what is, folks. All right. Our guest right now is going to help us understand the real business, the show business, and give us the dish, my friends, on the Oscars this Sunday. He's the editor of the industry website, Movie City News. His own website is thehotbutton.com. You can check out links to his work at markmaron.com. David Poland is here. Nice to see you again, David.
Nice to see you here. Nice to be here on Evening Sedation.
Yes, it's Sedation. I am doing everything I can. I am doing everything I can to not be sedated. There's no way
it's
I'm going to be sedated.
It's much better than waking up at 5:30 in the morning for morning sedation, though, I got to say.
It was. That's why we got you in here. I didn't want you sitting out there in the sad snack bar, by yourself looking at sports figures on the wall. All right, so let's get right down to it. Am I wrong, or are they already setting up for this fiasco that is the Oscars on Hollywood Boulevard, disabling my ability to take a right-hand turn and have a regular day?
Absolutely. Hollywood Boulevard will be shut down for 8 or 9 days, I believe, is the total.
So. It's not even a security issue. It's just, how can they build the tent for the royalty to walk down?
That's pretty much it. They're building slowly, and they want to have as much space as they can, and that way the homeless people aren't hanging out too long.
Yeah.
It's actually, it really is partially about the homeless people. There's a whole security grid issue, and they really try to move them out of there early and clear out the space.
There is a whole lot of people problems down there on Hollywood Boulevard. Yeah. bad, and the homeless is just maybe a mild part of it. There are some freaks that are indescribable, and I have no idea where they come from. It's almost like freaks come from around the world to walk down that street and go, look, howdy doody star.
Jimmy Kimmel. I think that's one of them. No question about it. He came from a long way for that.
He might come on our show. Well, I'm not going to say anything too bad about him, but his show's still on, right?
Jimmy Kimmel's show is still on, and actually today he hosted the Publicist Guild Awards.
Were you there?
And I was there. And
what does that mean?
It means the publicists get together every year. There's a guild that you have to be in if you want to be a publicist in this town, and either personal or studio.
Yeah.
And they give themselves awards, and they give some journalists awards, and they talk about how great it is to be a publicist.
So, and they just throw awards around. They're meaningless.
Meaningful to the people who get anybody who gets an award thinks it's meaningful. So
can I ask you a question, David? Let me just be honest with me. Can you tell me is a publicist is that a pathological problem to become a publicist?
I love publicists, but okay. I don't really have to deal with them that much. So it works out really well. I'm friendly. I like publicists because they're usually great looking women or gay men, which is not as appealing to me, but still they look good. It's a good looking group. They wear tight pants.
I think it's my personal problem. See, I dated one briefly, and it ended badly.
Yeah.
And literally, for months after that, people in the industry were walking up to me and going, yeah, I got the press release. Apparently, you're an ass.
Well, I pretty much was told very early on, don't sleep with publicists, because the sex is great, but the breakup is really, really bad. So,
and not only bad, everyone will know about it, and it'll be spun in the direction against you.
Your penis size will be an issue every single time, no matter what the truth is.
Even if it works, that is.
That's right.
Yeah. So let's talk about the Oscars. Is anything
that's pretty much what the Oscars are about is penis size too. It's
absolutely, and thank God the statue is only one size, and no one can say, "Look, it mine's bigger than yours."
And they do it anyway.
But they will anyways, because there's going to be multiple Oscars given to Brokeback Mountain, no doubt, perhaps Capote. But is anything interesting going to happen at all on Sunday?
Well, it's a mystery right now. There is a sense that Crash may actually come up and beat Brokeback Mountain.
Really?
And it's not even a joke. There are people who say, oh, you're only saying that to get some excitement going. But the truth is, Crash, as I've perceived it, Crash is kind of a valley movie.
Yeah.
Brokeback Mountain's kind of an other side of the hill movie. It's a Beverly Hills movie.
It's a mountain
movie. And a
Santa
Monica movie.
Right.
But it's on the other side of that mountain.
Right, yeah.
And the business is mostly made up of people from the valley. It's
a very normal constituency. Yeah.
And there are 5,500 of them. And the fact is, there are a lot of actors in that movie that everybody knows and likes that have been part of the business for a long time.
Interesting.
The talent who made the movie is much more part of the industry than the people who made Brokeback. So there's a real movement, and people do love the movie.
How do you like that, people who are listening? There's a real movement against Brokeback Mountain because people know people. Yeah, there is absolutely
For Crash. I mean, honestly, it's not so much against Brokeback
Mountain.
Right,
I understand.
There are some people who are against Brokeback Mountain.
But every time I talk to you, there's still part of me in my heart that just holds on to this idea that these awards are based on integrity and goodness.
Well, they're based on what people think, and the truth is it's basically a survey of 5,500 people, most of whom you probably wouldn't like.
Some of them bitter.
Most of them over 50, most of them over 60, many of them over 70, some of them over 80. So it's a very specific constituency, and the truth is every year we kind of convince ourselves that it's the best of the year, but the truth is there are usually half a dozen really great movies that don't get nominations, that aren't part of the process. That deserve to be part of the process, that get lost, and we kind of, the art people remember them, but the regular people go, oh yeah, remember Titanic won.
Yeah.
And that's the only movie that year.
I'll tell you though, this year, there's good movies. There's
very good movies, but nobody's seen them. I mean, the truth of the matter is most of America has not seen Capote, have not seen Good Night and Good Luck.
They don't even know what Capote is. They think it's about food.
Yeah, they're looking for the sequel, Capote 2, The Next Generation.
Yeah. They're like, Capote, is it about sugared fruit? Compote?
And it is, in fact, about sugar fruit. Oddly enough. So, go figure. But a little more ripe and broke back. That's a whole other joke.
Oh, man.
You know, it's funny. People pointed out there are no gays in Crash and there are no Jews in Crash. So it's just like Los Angeles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right.
That's exactly the way it is around here.
So how is that possibly going to win?
Well, it's the thing is about Crash is that people think it's either brilliant or they hate it. But you can't vote against the movie. So
I'll be honest with you.
The people who think it's brilliant love it.
For one of those movies that interweaves many different narratives into one narrative, it worked better than a lot of movies that try to do that. I don't think I've seen a movie that has done that successfully since Shortcuts, which I thought worked.
Well, there are people who feel it's kind of the cheap version of Magnolia.
Yeah, which was the cheap version of an Altman movie, right?
Yeah. Ironically, Paul Thomas Anderson just oversaw Bob Altman, who just made a movie of Prairie Home Companion, And because he's so old, he can't get insurance.
Prairie Home Companion, so, the Garrison Keillor thing?
They made a Prairie Home Companion movie that's premiering South by Southwest.
Is Garrison Keillor in it?
I don't know whether he does a cameo or not, but it's basically they make the stories come to life, essentially. From
oh, my God.
Companion.
It's an Altman movie? So
and
that
it's
would
got
be...
Lily Tomlin and Meryl Streep as sisters.
Okay.
Who are a singing
well,
duo.
Good. Okay.
They've got Lindsay Lohan's in it. All these actors
Oh, so
in
they're
it.
Taking the characters, the idea.
Yeah, they're taking the characters.
Oh, my. I was just thinking of like a three-hour-long Garrison Keillor broadcast filmed. It would be like...
I'm already asleep. There's actually a Neil Young film out that's that John Demme did.
How is
it? Great. It's basically a concert of his.
I want to see that.
And it's really wonderful. It's really enjoyable.
Neil Young's
movie,
an incredible guy because his music is some of the only music, rock music, that is actually timeless. You can listen to it in any generation. It does not age. It's very peculiar.
Yeah, and Neil's a funny guy. Neil, spent a little time with him at Sundance, spent a little time with him since, and he's...
He's hardcore. He's kind of jaded and cynical.
Very hardcore. Mm-hmm. Decides not to show up for things. Oh, I don't feel like doing, that show. Everybody, you got to do it. It's
right,
funny.
Right.
He's like, forget about it. And then he goes and does something tiny and that nobody cares about, but he really does what he cares about.
I think I'm going to probably get the DVD. I want to see it, but I don't know if it's going to happen. We had Josh Olson in here last night talking to us about his movie.
Josh Olson.
He's a big boy.
He is.
What a great movie that was, though, and it's a shame that he hasn't really got a shot, does he? Said to him, I said, look, we're talking about A History of Violence, by the way. Josh Olson, the screenwriter, was with us last night. And I think it's a brilliant, provocative, interesting human movie that, as you said, a lot of people have not seen.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't feel like he has a shot, and I guess he's right. Is that true?
Well, the funny thing is New Line kind of sold it like a boy movie, like they were selling it to teenagers.
Yeah.
And then ultimately there was a movie that was really about something, but the critics kind of went against it, a lot of them, because they thought it was all action and not enough meaning. I thought it was a great movie. I think it's actually one of the best movies of the year. I think it's probably Cronenberg's best film.
Absolutely.
And Cronenberg and Josh really worked together on that script after Josh had done the original draft and made something that I think is an important – it's almost like a fable. I mean, it's not – hyper-real.
It absolutely is a
but
fable.
It's kind of surreal. It's a little bit hyper-real. It's a little bit not truth. You know, it's not like what people say, it has to be down and dirty.
It's
more than that. It's not something else.
It's truly a provocative movie. It's the kind of movie where you walk out of the movie not talking about the movie per se, but about what it provokes in you in terms of moral compasses and what is right and what is wrong and what is bad and what is good.
Unless you get distracted by The Sex and the Stairs or whatever it is. Which
was good.
Well, that's great, too, to look at The Sex and the Stairs. But ultimately, that's about something. The relationship that gets to this very tough sex scene on the stairs, it's so about her wanting it, even though he's now the aggressor. Kind of the aggressor, too. And it's
But when you say aggressor, I mean, we're talking aggressor.
Yeah.
She knows the baggage, and we don't want to tip the movie. But the weird thing about me is
you're
going to
see some black and blue marks, no problem.
Yeah, I've been bad enough in my life to go, I know what that's like.
Yeah, with publicists.
Yeah. that is true.
The publicist on the stairs.
Publicist with...
Josh has no chance, and I love him. But he has other movies he's working on already, and he's going to have a great career. He's just starting.
Yeah, he's great.
And
he's
even
a nice
Bill
guy.
Hurt, thank God he got nominated, because that's a brilliant performance in the movie.
So happy to see Bill Hurt back. Yeah. But let's shift from here, which is A History of Violence is a film that was adapted from a graphic novel to this movie that's coming out soon. I see the coming attractions. I'm compelled. I didn't read the graphic novel. V for Vendetta. You like it.
I think it's sensational. I think it's actually the best of those movies. It's from the Wachowski brothers wrote it. Their first AD from the other movies directed it.
Mm-hmm. The Wachowski brothers, who are freaks.
One of them is somewhere in the midst of a transsexual life.
I mean, freak in a good way. I say that with a progressive slant in my voice.
I mean, they're basically
freaks,
very regular guys from Chicago. They're meat and potatoes guys from Chicago, and one of them turned out to maybe want to be a woman.
But freaks in the sense that they actually their imagination pushes the margin. They're out there, and
well,
I like
very
that.
Much about the human responsibility to make choices, and that we're all making choices. That's what The Matrix was really about, was waking up and making choices. Mm-hmm. This movie's about that also. It's a much different kind of stylized movie. But it's got so much more in it than the advertising suggests. They're trying to, again, sell it to the market that's interested in things blowing up.
And tell us, David, what's in there?
Well, there's a very intense storyline about being gay,
really?
Which I think is actually much more provocative than Brokeback Mountain, and about basically the nation oppressing its people for the good of the people. And the idea that that's going on in the world, and the idea there's a theme in it about the government actually starting a crisis so they can save everybody from the crisis, so they can empower themselves.
Wow.
And these are major themes that, even though this is in some ways a comic book movie, are really powerful and really meaningful, and they're done in a very direct way.
That's V for Vendetta. We're talking to David Poland. You can go to his website. It's thehotbutton.com. And we're talking about movies, obviously, but we're talking about V for Vendetta, which apparently has themes that we talk about on this particular network every day. Yeah, well, that's exciting.
Well,
when it never gets
set. The thrill about it is that 16-year-olds may actually think about it
and learn something.
You know, they go to see the movie to see things blow up, but then they actually get this content that makes them think because you can't help but be moved by it.
And they'll make connections, hopefully.
Yeah.
Now, I was reading your blog today, and apparently you've been spending some time at home watching some television.
I don't even know. I've been running through my TiVo. I've been away for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I came back, and there's this TiVo full of stuff. And,
yeah.
You know. I'm actually, Grey's Anatomy, for God's sakes, is actually good. Oh, my God, what a crazy idea.
It's very compelling.
It is.
I like it. And you know what? I don't watch a lot of TV. I don't even TiVo anything. I just kind of randomly sit down in the middle of things.
Yeah.
And I cannot stop watching CSI until they pull the rib cage off. And then something about my own mortality shakes me into the kitchen. And then I come back and watch the rest of it.
Well, now I'm very into House, which is another one of the medical
shows. Yeah, I haven't watched that one yet.
Fascinating. Hugh Lowry is brilliant in it. Has won awards for it. There's a lot of good television all of a sudden. I really don't watch television normally, but then you realize Sopranos is coming. That's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
This new show about the marriage of one guy to three women is interesting.
That looks good. So why don't you hang out for a minute? We're going to get my dad's movie reviews. We're talking to David Poland. We'll hear my dad's movie reviews in a second. We'll get back on the Bush tip in just a second. So stick around. You're listening to the Mark Maron Show. It's 11:50 Progressive Talk. It's 20 past.
Mark Maron.
Wow, what does that even mean? Thanks, Jim, I guess.
You're welcome.
We're talking to my buddy David Poland. He's the editor of the industry website, Movie City News. He's also got his own website, thehotbutton.com. We're talking about movies. Folks, hang in there, man. The politics is coming. It's just around the corner. Not only that, but we're going to talk to Janet Reitman. Okay, we're going to call her up, and she just wrote a piece in Rolling Stone about Scientology. So I don't even know if I'm going to get through this broadcast. I might be taken out in the middle of that by a sniper on top of the NBC building dispatched by the Hubbard police. Who knows? But right now I want to get David Poland's opinion on this next segment. So let's get up to speed on the Oscar nominees with our resident film critic, my father, in a segment we like to call Dr. Maron's Movies.
Hello.
Hey, Dad.
Hey, no, man.
All right, good. Where are you? You at home or are you in the car or something?
I'm in a car. We just went shopping, run away home.
Yeah? Where'd you go shopping?
Hey, the famous Walmart.
Walfarts. What'd you buy over there at Walmart today?
About $3 worth of cooking pans, baking pans.
You bought baking pans?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you get 100 of them?
No.
Oh.
You can only get 100 in Costco. Now all we needed was a handful of stuff.
Well, let's talk about movies, buddy. You want to?
Sure.
All right. Well, we're coming up on the Oscars, so I think we should talk about these Oscar movies. Did you see most of them?
Yeah. Right now there's a whole handful of movies that I really enjoyed. I mean, it's nice to look forward to going to the movies when they have something to offer that really is appealing.
Yeah, did you see the Brokeback Mountain?
Yeah, I saw Brokeback Mountain.
Did you like it?
I walked out of it saying, hey, it's a good movie, but I didn't walk out of it with a critical analysis like I've heard since.
Yeah.
As to the things that made it a critically acclaimed movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, to me, it was just a movie.
The gay thing didn't bother you at all, though? You still found it compelling?
Which did bother me?
They were gay. They were homosexuals in the
film. No, I'm not homophobic at all. I think the whole system is fair. I think everyone deserves a fair shot, and people have the right to do what they think is correct and what they feel is correct.
Okay. Now, what about Capote? Did you see Capote?
I enjoyed Capote in that. I had read a little bit about him. I read some of his works.
Do you know he was homosexual? Did that bother you at all with Capote?
Oh, no. Now, I thought the movie depicted him well.
Yeah.
Who's the actor?
I don't know. What's his name again?
Seymour Phillips.
Yeah, Seymour Phillips. Philip Seymour Hoffman. That's it. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Excellent depiction of Capote. I thought he did a super job.
How about Crash? Did you see Crash?
I didn't see Crash, no.
There's a lot going on in that film. You should see that. It's one of the few films this year. I don't believe any homosexuals.
My wife just reminded me, we did see Crash. We saw it when it first came out. With all the different scenes and all the different happenings. That was a well-done movie.
So what about any crappy movies out there that we should avoid?
I don't see any bad ones,
Yeah, did you see Flowers of Tomorrow?
No, I did not.
No, I made that up.
call.
Okay. Well, I love you, Pop. Take care.
Thanks for calling. I love you too, baby.
Thanks, man. Bye.
Bye.
I am awful. Why do I do that? I'm playing with my dad's head. All right, so let's sum it up. The gay thing in Brokeback Mountain shouldn't bother you. Seymour Phillips did a great job portraying Truman Capote, and there are really no bad movies out there right now. All right, David Poland?
I love Flowers of
Tomorrow.
Flowers of tomorrow.
I'm so bad. I'm like a bad kid. My poor dad's like, he calls me, leaves me a message. It's like, I couldn't listen to the show. I tried. He doesn't realize that he can't, but he might be listening now streaming on KT. TLK's website. So before we lose you here, David Poland, what are you looking forward to the most this Sunday's Oscar Academy Awards event?
A nap afterwards.
come on. The food? Anything good?
The party.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's funny. It's a very, very low-key event. There's very little competition. The supporting actor is one of the few categories that's really a major category that nobody's quite sure about what's going to happen and kind of people are looking to see if Matt Dillon wins that award, then there's a good chance Crash may win the movie, Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, it's a nap. I mean, it really is. We kind of know everything that's going to happen.
Do people take bets? Is there action going down? Do you got bets? Do you have friends? I mean, if you want to talk about
it. I go to a party that actually will have an entire board where everybody gives in their $10 on their way in the door and covers the board. But for me, that's a low priority personally. But people do use my picks to try to win their pools at their different houses. So
well, there you go.
Notes afterwards saying I either won or lost money for people.
So can they see the picks at thehotbutton.com?
They can see them at moviecitynews.com. There's actually not only my own, but also we have the Gurus of Gold, which are 11 journalists from around the country who figure out what the Oscar picks are going to be. So we're pretty much in consensus on almost everything.
All right. Well, thank you so much, David Poland. And I'm going to have to go and make some bets with my wife. I think that's the way to do it. So when we come back here in just a second, folks, we're going to get into this neocon death cult problem. We're going to get into the boil monkey puppet of the Cheney regime's neocon death cult and his activities in response to Katrina. So stick around. And you listen to the Mark Maron Show. It's a progressive.
Monkey brains. Mark Maron.
Oh, you got me down. You know about it, and then you hand me the article.
I want to talk about this desalination plant that was just approved at Huntington Beach. Nobody talks about that.
Well, tell it. What is it? What are you talking about, Jim?
Biggest desalination. What is it?
Take your time. Pace yourself.
It's the biggest desalination plant in the United States, just approved in the most beautiful beach front property.
So you're saying it's a big industrial mess that they're going to put on the beach to make drinking water out of seawater.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous because you know they don't need that in Huntington Beach. They don't need that anywhere around Huntington Beach. And it's a huge boondoggle by the Poseidon company,
mm-hmm.
which has also gone bankrupt in other cities and
mm-hmm.
done very badly by them in Florida and other municipalities.
Well, speaking of fresh water, I know you just moved. How's that shower working out?
Oh, man.
What's the matter, Jim?
The
new apartment, but you didn't check the shower before you moved in, did you? When you were looking at the apartment, you didn't say, let's check the water pressure, honey.
I flushed the toilet.
Yeah, well, that's good if that works, but you might want to check the, how's the water pressure?
Well, we had to find a place, okay? We had a lot of pressure.
I'm being an ass, too. I bought a house, all right, my first house. I didn't check the water pressure, and that thing trickles out. It comes out in that arc, that kind of dribble, and I don't even know what to do about it. We're on a hill, so I said, you would think the modern technology, we can put a man on the moon. Can't you make this harder? And the guy said, on a hill, I don't know if we can.
You need a patch for that.
Yeah, I know.
Make it harder.
The water pressure.
You need new pipes.
Oh, no, I can't do that. I can't. No. This is the thing. You buy a house, and it's just never anything. I don't want to talk about it. 877-520-1150 is our number. And I was just talking about this before. I want to get back into it. A video of a briefing of federal officials. Okay, this happened. This is a federal officials, including Michael Brown, the FEMA chief, New Orleans Governor Kathleen Blanco. This is a day before Hurricane Katrina hits. They are sitting in a room. They are talking about the possible devastation that this hurricane could bring to New Orleans. Michael Brown is saying this is the big one. This is the big one. It's going to happen, and it's on video. This video came out of nowhere. Now, this is an interesting thing about this: is that I don't care where the video came from. You know, a lot of people, I heard Randy Rhoads talking about today, and people are calling into her show. I've talked to people, and they say, look, you know, this guy who leaked this video, what a great man. Who the hell knows what that guy was or whether it was a guy or not? The tape was leaked. It doesn't matter who leaked it. It might just been a petty action. It might have been politically motivated. But I'll tell you something. I'm glad that they did. All right? Because on this tape, what you see is you see George Bush piped in by video phone. He's piped in at a video conference, and they are telling him, man. They are telling him. You've got all these people in this room saying, this is it. This storm, Katrina, will most likely drown the city of New Orleans, all right? And now, granted, this is a problem that should have been taken care of years ago. They've known about this problem. Everyone in New Orleans knew about this problem. The Army Corps of Engineers knew these levees couldn't hold. They needed money to do it, and they didn't do it before, all right? I'm not going to let Michael Brown off the hook. I'm not going to let Chertoff off the hook, or any of them, Blanco, any of them, state officials. It doesn't matter. The whole thing is a fiasco. But the bottom line is that George Bush was on video phone, and they were telling him about it, okay? They were telling him about it. They said, this is going to happen. It's going down. And this is what he said in response during that briefing.
I want to assure the folks at the state level that we are fully prepared to not only help you during the storm, but we will move in whatever resources and assets we have at our disposal after the storm to help you deal with the loss of property, and we pray for no loss of life, of course.
This moron, not only did he not have a plan, or did he even have any assessment of what they actually could do. All right. Granted, half the National Guard wasn't even there because they're busy fighting a war, draining the bank, you know, draining the treasury of this country, bankrupting this country for no damn reason other than to put that money into his friends' pockets. But he had no plan at all. He was just paying lip service to this idea. He was just placating these people that were saying, dude, you don't understand. This is going to take us out. All right. Now, this is not really the issue that I wanted to get into. The issue I wanted to get into is 4 days later, George Bush, the blow monkey puppet of the Cheney regime's neocon death cult, is on Good Morning America. He's on Good Morning America, and they're asking him about Katrina. And this is where you catch him in a tremendous way. He's giving a statement. Let's hear this. Let's hear this.
There is frustration, but I want people to know there's a lot of help coming. I don't think anybody anticipated the breach of the levees.
They didn't anticipate it. Will you play the first one, Jason the Jew from Wisconsin?
I want to assure the folks at the state level that we are fully prepared to not only help you during the storm, but we will move in whatever resources and assets we have at our disposal after the storm to help you deal with the loss of property, and we pray for no loss of life, of course.
Okay, so that was Sunday, August 28th, all right? That was a day before the 17th Street levee breached. He was alerted. He was told. He knew exactly what could happen. They all knew exactly what could happen. They didn't have a plan in place. The bottom line is, let me just hear this clip from 4 days after he was told that the levees could break, basically.
There is frustration, but I want people to know there's a lot of help coming. I don't think anybody anticipated the breach of the levees.
Okay, well, he did know. That's all I'm saying. He knew, and he didn't care. See, that's the thing about this administration. The neocon death cult does not care, all right? They hate government. They create ineffectual bureaucracies and interagency competitions. They hate government, my friends, and as far as it can be used to govern, to assist, to guarantee order, safety, justice for the people of this country. In the neocon death cult's eyes, the government should be small, and it should function primarily as a money laundering operation and a means to protect private industry. That's all they care about. I mean, come on, people. There is a hell of a lot of money in rebuilding. The failed response to Katrina wasn't complacency. It was an experiment in free market capitalism. I know that's dark. It's negative. It is paranoid. It is a speculative investigation on behalf of me. Complicity through negligence is part of the business plan, my friends. It was like strip mining, only the thing they were stripping was the underclass population and the infrastructure of an American city. All right? I am saying here that Bush knew that the people with money, his people, would get out. They'd get out of New Orleans and possibly come back in bigger numbers when they rebuild, when they make money off that rebuilding. Remember, folks, this is a president whose biggest concern after the disaster was for Trent Lott's loss of his second house. All right. That was his biggest concern. It was over Trent Lott. My buddy Trent Lott lost his house. I can't wait till he rebuilds it because it's going to be a bigger house, going to be a nicer house. I'm going to sit on the porch. Not to mention the weird sort of plantation imagery of Trent Lott and George Bush sitting on the porch of a new house. It's just sickening. That was what in his head. People with money will always think that they can get away with anything because if there's a price to pay, they think they can pay it. All right? This whole neocon death cult, the business model is based on damage control. That is where the money is for these conscienceless greed demons. Their assumption is basically, people, that we are too busy, too stupid, too scared, and too selfish to care. More than having a few, you know, they just think that we're just going to have a few conversations the next day over the water cooler. Wow, that was awful. It was horrifying. And did you see what happened? And you know what? I got to be honest with you. They're right in most cases. I mean, it came out last month that Bush and the neocon death cult knew there was no plan in place to deal with the evacuations for Katrina or assistance. While people were screaming for help from rooftops a foot above water and corpses were floating by, they were saying it was under control. Sound familiar? Well, it should, folks. It's the same as Iraq. No plan. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to them because they will always profit. All right? Their assumptions are always bottom line assumptions. These guys are gamblers. All right? But they never lose money. They lose lives. They lose our lives. It is all the same as war, but it is a war against us. We are the fodder for their schemes, and they have worked us into their bottom line. If the number of people it affects is dealable in terms of damage control, and that damage control can look like propaganda, suppression, secrecy, lies, they will gamble. They are banking on the rest of us forgetting or believing what they tell us. If it affects most people, they will try to hold off until they fill their bags with money. Then we'll just have to adapt or die. That's the policy for people beneath the upper class. Adapt or die. And the bottom line is, we will adapt. But why can't we catalyze this resilience through this adaptation into some sort of anger that creates such undeniable momentum that we take back our democracy? Or better yet, how about own it for the first time in history? How would that be? There's no indication to me that this thing ever functioned properly. I mean, it's a great idea. But I look at history, and it always seems that it was some sort of game. I mean, the real bottom line is that anything that happens to Americans anywhere affects all Americans. That's the way it should be. And that's a liberal idea. If you really care about people and you really care about this country, you should care about everybody in it. You should care about justice. You should care about the protections that are offered to us through the Constitution. I mean, we're all supposed to have a voice in this system. I mean, we got to find these voices. And I think that with this thing, with this tape, and with everything else that's going on, with Cheney and with the war and with so many elements of what's going on with this administration, I think things are starting to turn. It's completely indicated by a 34% approval rating, by 18% approval rating for Cheney, that people are starting to at least not believe this crap anymore. And on that note, Jim, I would really love it in just a second. I mean, folks, in just a minute, we're going to be talking about Scientology. I'm going to get a woman who wrote this big article in the New York Times. Her name is Janet Reitman. She's going to be on the phone with us. It's not the New York Times. I'm sorry. The Rolling Stone. It's a feature article on Scientology. I'd like to talk to people about Scientology. I myself am petrified of Scientology. And I think that's for a couple of reasons. One, I am a little spiritually ungrounded and it makes me nervous that I might actually be able to utilize it somehow, and I don't want to get near it. But if you have any thoughts about religion or Scientology specifically, 877-520-1150 is our number. I'd like to talk to some of you searchers. My brother's a searcher, and I, too, am content to being just agnostic, bordering on atheist like you, Jim. Could you play us with the Marc Maron theme song?
Sure. Strumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his show, killing me softly with his show.
show, telling my whole life. With his show, the Mark Maron Show. Oh, 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 oh.
Al Gore's butt boy.
What?
Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. 877-520-1150 is the number. We're going to be talking to Janet Reitman in just a few minutes about her Rolling Stone piece on Scientology. I've asked for some calls on religion. Let's take a couple. John in Hollywood, how are you, John? John, let me get you. How are you, John?
I'm super. Super. How are you, Mark?
I'm good, man. So are you a Scientologist?
No. I don't really know a lot about Scientology.
Uh-huh.
My religion is idolatry.
Uh-huh.
I worship American Idol.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Specifically the Holy Trinity of Simon, Paula, and Randy. Mostly Simon.
Is this for real?
Oh, yeah, by all means, yeah. No, there's a lot of us.
Well,
there's tens of us, it seems.
But it's a horrible show. It's like the worst show on TV. I can't even watch it for 2 minutes.
No, that's what you're missing out. People criticize it, but it fits perfectly into the whole Judeo-Christian ethos.
And how?
It's just an offshoot. Well, there is a God, Simon, and
oh
we
God.
Fear him,
yeah.
And he speaks the truth.
Right.
He can be very kind, especially if like, say, you're a black girl with
come
kind of a large
on.
Back
yeah.
eye.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And he seems to, the Lord our God seems to really like the black girl and Asians. He likes Asian women as well.
So does that mean
white guys? But we're not the chosen.
So is this sort of like a cult? So does that mean that you spend your life trying?
No, not a cult, a religion.
Okay. Well, so has your faith ever been tested in any way?
Well, there was a moment last year when Paula, who's part of the Holy Trinity, part of the one God, she was accused of laying with a contestant.
Right. I remember that.
You understand what
yeah,
I mean by
sure.
laying?
Yeah. Of course I do. Yeah.
Okay, and my faith was shaken a little bit, but then I realized that she is part of the one true God. She can do whatever she wants, and there's nothing. People think I'm crazy for worshiping a pop star, but there's nothing crazy. I mean, it's not like she's, I don't know, top of my head, a science fiction author or something.
Okay, I understand that, but I mean, you know, some people, the weird thing is, there's a lot of people like worship pop stars, but they don't organize a religion. Now, do you guys meet? Do you know the other members of this thing? Or?
Well, it's mostly an internet community for the moment. We're just kind of getting things rolling, and we've been asked to. We've been outside the studios where they shoot American Idol, and they
I'm sure you have.
Asked us
yeah.
to leave. But I mean, all religions
okay.
have trouble getting going.
All right,
going.
Yeah, well, good luck with it, and thanks for calling.
I'd like
yeah.
to sing for you.
Oh
like,
my
quick,
God.
Real quick.
All right.
You raise me up.
Oh my
so
God.
I can, this is for my audition.
Oh God, go ahead.
So I can stand on.
You're
mountains.
Terrible. You're terrible. This is awful. You should never sing. You're awful.
Oh,
terrible.
You're the prophet.
I can't stand what
prophet,
you're doing.
Mark, you're the prophet. You're who I've been looking to. You're
yeah.
the one. We shall follow you. I am a Marxist. Is Marxist taken?
No, I don't think so.
I'm a Marxist then.
Oh, good. All right. Well, then I guess I'll talk to you later then.
Indeed.
I'll
thank
call,
you.
Call any time.
I will.
Well, thank you for calling, John.
No, Mark.
Oh, thank you. Is that guy for real? That guy can't be for real. Oh, man. All right, look, folks, we're going to talk to Janet Reitman in just a second about Scientology. We've got Sammy the Stem Cell in the wings. The Dick of the Day is coming up. It's great. It's great, right, Jim? It's 11:57. Why am I telling you the hour? Because we're only in L.A.
He's handsome, yet emotionally crippled. Mark Maron.
I love you, Jim Earl. I love Jim Earl.
I know that.
6 past the hour. How you doing, folks? We're talking about religion a little bit. We're going to be talking about Scientology. I've been reading this article, man. We got the press release of this article. I guess it's out, actually, in the Rolling Stone magazine, this month's Rolling Stone, Inside Scientology by Janet Reitman. I got to be honest with you, man. Scientology has always given me the willies. It just gives me, I don't even know that much about it. And I read this article. I learned a lot about it. I'm going to talk to her in a second. We're going to learn more about it. But I won't go, I'll read anything, Jim. I'll read anything. Will not go near the book Dianetics because I just don't know what page it happens on. You know, even if I'm curious, like, what are these people up to? I'm afraid to pick up the book. What about page six? I just, like, snap, and I'm like, oh, I don't need my parents. They're the ones that broke me. When's the mothership coming? How quick does it happen? You understand?
That was L. Ron Hubbard's plan.
I know. That's why I don't read the book, but that makes me uncomfortable. That makes me uncomfortable, all right? So we've got the author of this book, this piece. She's on the phone now. She's talking to us from New York. And as I said, this article, Inside Scientology, appears in the current issue of Rolling Stone. Janet Reitman, welcome to the show. Good evening.
Hey, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Now, you did 9 months of field research for this piece.
Right.
And what blew your mind about Scientology? Like, I know nothing about it, but you've been in the trenches. What made you go, oh my God?
You know, I got to tell you, so many things made me go, oh my God.
Yeah.
But I think one of the key things was that people who are really into Scientology wind up inhabiting a kind of parallel universe to the one that we live in the secular world. And I've really never seen anything like this in any other group. I mean, even, I wouldn't say that devout Catholics live in that kind of world, or devout Jews, maybe ultra-Orthodox Jews maybe would. But Scientologists are a very elite group that has their own ethical code. They have a language system that was devised by their founder, L. Ron Hubbard. They have words. They have dictionaries that contain words that Hubbard made up.
It almost sounds like, to me, Janet Reitman, that it sounds like a corporation. It sounds to me that when you have a corporate environment, that those people live also in an alternate reality, and that this religion is not really, it's not really designed to welcome in the outside world, is it?
Well, Scientology, first of all, is structured, it's a hierarchical organization,
mm-hmm.
and it's structured very much like a corporation, and actually their key leaders are called, they have a board of directors, and they hold, titles like chairman of the board.
Right.
They don't hold titles like vicar or pope or whatever.
When I read about it, it seems to me that they prey on people, though. They exploit people, because it seems the point of entrance is really, are you lonely? Are you afraid?
Yeah.
Are you angry? Do you feel like your life isn't working out? And they present this corporate model or this idea. It's almost, it's a self-help application first, that they're going to help you with your life.
They have a self-help application with a religious twist, where they say, we can help you fix the problems in your life, and we can do this. And the subtext is, we can do this better than any other religion, although they don't actually say that. But that is definitely the subtext. And if you interview enough Scientologists, they'll tell you that, Catholicism didn't work for them, or, their devout, Methodist upbringing didn't work for them. And Buddhism maybe didn't work for them, but Scientology did work for them.
I live in Los Angeles. This is Scientology Central.
Right.
And you don't know who's a Scientologist, you don't know who isn't. I tend to think that they're actually transmitting something into the air that's making us all marginally detached from reality. I don't know if that's true. I drive past the Celebrity Center constantly. They have a huge Scientology complex on Sunset.
Yeah.
The parking lot always full. I'm assuming that those cars are parked there and they might not belong to anybody, because I don't believe that there is that many. How many did you, because they say there are millions or thousands or hundreds of thousands. How many actually are there?
They claim 10 million,
mm-hmm.
and my research showed me that there could be anywhere from 50,000 to 200,000 would be what most of the critics of the church would say. And I might venture that you could go up to maybe 500,000.
Wow.
But the point is, when Scientology claims this huge membership, they're including people who have bought the book Dianetics.
That
does not make you a Scientologist. That makes you a reader of a book.
Our guest is Janet Reitman. Her special report, Inside Scientology, appears in the current issue of Rolling Stone magazine that is out yesterday. Now, look, I'm afraid of the book Dianetics. I'm an open-minded guy. I'll read almost anything, but I don't know if I am spiritually grounded enough. Did you find at any point during your process in researching this, were you frightened for your own spiritual sanity? Did you have, in your life, how about that? Let's broaden that question. Have you ever had a point where you're like, I wonder if this would work for me?
Yeah, I did, and I'll tell you something.
Yeah.
There are, to be very fair to the Church of Scientology,
okay,
there are techniques and there are beliefs that this church embraces that I think are absolutely valid, and hey, if they work for you, terrific. But the longer that you're in it, and if you get really into it, the thing is that Scientologists are very big on the hard sell. And L. Ron Hubbard himself wrote tons of books about public relations and about sales techniques. And a lot of the sort of courses that you get in basic Scientology courses are all oriented around this idea of sales. And so, you know, when you walk into the Church of Scientology, no matter where you are, and this happened to me personally, they're trying to sell you, and they're trying to sell you on, you know, enlightened spirituality, on this idea that you can become an enlightened and fully free being, and that will cost you a lot of money and many, many years of your life.
Did
and
you
the
become
longer that you're involved in it, the more into it you can become, you know?
Did you become a Scientologist, Janet? Tell me the truth.
No, I didn't, honestly. I really didn't. Although I have to tell you, my editor is kind of worried about me after the first day because I came back going, you know, it's not so bad.
Yeah, you sound a little excited.
Cool.
I was hoping for some real dark stuff here. I was really hoping to slander and make the church uncomfortable.
Here's something that I can tell you that I think is really uncomfortable, and this is where I find really, you know, true fault with the church.
Okay.
They're a controlling organization, and they have a lot of policies, internal policies, to control their membership. And I see this policy as something unique to Scientology. I don't see it. I know that certain other religions, for, you know, fundamentalist Mormons, the Amish, you know, there are a few other religions that have these kinds of policies, but these are groups that are very, very cloistered. I mean, Scientology purports to be a mainstream religion. They're reaching out to the mainstream. And they have a number of policies that are just, I think, are somewhat unacceptable to mainstream sensibilities.
Well, why do they do it? Why do they expect that out of people? Why would they it's coercion. It's terrifying, or it's almost terrorizing a member into staying in.
But the thing is the interesting thing is the members that I've spoken to, and I've spoken to dozens and dozens and dozens of people, including current members, and many former members, but the former members that I spoke with, and I really want to make this a very clear point, I spoke with former members that are still quite positive about aspects of Scientology. They're not extremists. They're not like extreme, you know, sort of Scientology survivors. These are people that, you know, have recently left the church and are still trying to kind of come to terms with everything. And a lot of them grew up in Scientology.
All right, well, let me ask you another question. It seems to me that the way this church, if we're going to call it that, and I guess they call it that, so we can call it that, is structured.
I mean, they have at least 50,000 followers. You
okay,
know?
But it seems to me what is going on there is they have to terrify a core group of Scientology believers to basically run the operation. And not unlike other religions, mm-hmm. some people are going to leave. They're going to take what they want. They take what they can use. They leave the rest, and they go on with their lives. I mean, Jerry Seinfeld's like that. There are examples of people that have spent time in Scientology,
sure.
used some of the principles, and integrated them into their own personal philosophy
exactly.
without committing to the church. Now, my real question is, though, it seems to me that other religions, there are plenty of other religions that make people feel very uncomfortable if they marry out of the religion. There are other religions, I think, that I do ostracize people if they stop believing or stop playing their part in the religion. I guess my question is, as I've noticed about Scientology, is that they don't present themselves as a charitable organization in the way that other religions do. They aren't philanthropic. It seems a lot of their principles are strictly selfish, even though they may want to outreach to regular people. What they are saying is, it's okay to be selfish. This is how you can make your life better, where it seems that the Judeo-Christian religions are really about, you know, embracing and taking care of people and giving them a way to engage with other people and in the world in a charitable manner, which I think just doesn't exist in Scientology.
Well, I mean, I think that is right to some degree, but wrong on another level. I think Scientology has made tremendous efforts in the past 10 years to kind of wear the cloak of a traditional religion in terms of its outreach and volunteerism and its missionary work. You know, they went to this. I was in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, and the Scientologists were down there doing disaster relief. These people paid out of their own pocket to go there, and they were there, you know, helping first responders. They do have literacy programs that are apparently free. There's one on Hollywood Boulevard, actually, very right across the street from their main office.
But are those altruistic programs? There is no price to pay?
The literacy program is free. The Narcanon program, which is their drug rehabilitation program, is quite expensive, but given the fact that a lot of drug rehab programs are 28 days and Narcanon could be a couple of months depending on how long it takes you to detox, you know, it's not an outlandish
price,
like $20,000 or something, like whatever that may be. The point is that I think that Scientology has done some you know, they've done certain things in the social betterment, you know, area that are positive. But the thing that you need to consider is that they're very specific. They don't do food, you know, they don't do soup kitchens. They don't do clothing drives. They don't do just general what's needed help. They do very specific things, literacy, anti-drug, anti-psychiatry, and a morals campaign.
Well,
okay?
but all
of these things are essential to being a Scientologist. You have to be able to read. You can't be into drugs. You can't be going to a psychiatrist, and you have to have a good grasp on sort of basic ethics and morals.
But that's the ethics and morals, you know, as they are interpreted by the Church of Scientology. And also,
yeah.
It seems to me,
to some degree, yeah.
Just by virtue of what you're saying, that all those programs, Narcanon has come under investigation before. They
yes.
have, they're an unusual drug rehabilitation program.
They are, and many people are very, I know a lot of doctors are very, very critical.
Right.
Of their,
so
of
what
program.
You're dealing with, though, is you're dealing with, you know, people who can't read, people who are strung out on mm-hmm. drugs, people who are compromised on a moral level, mm. and people who need psychiatrists are all extremely vulnerable.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Scientology has its key is to find, and this is what every person, every recruiter, you know, every Scientologist that gets involved in the recruiting, you know, registration for courses, you know, process, are told to find what they call a person's ruin. Which is, I think, a very fascinating term. You know, what it is that is ruining your life, and they call it your ruin, and you are sort of there to find out what that person's ruin is, and whatever their ruin is, Scientology can fix
right.
it.
All right, Janet Reitman, just stay on the phone for 1 second. There's a lot more I want to get into, and we're going to get into it after the break. I want to take calls, 877-520-1150. We're talking about Scientology. It is 19 past the hour. You're listening to Progressive Talk, AM 1150.
Wow! MarkMaron.com! Games, prizes, free vacations, none of that stuff! It's all at MarkMaron.com! And now, he hates his body and he's confused. Mark!
What we've already discussed tonight, would you categorize the Church of Scientology as a predatory group?
There are a lot of religions out there that are, to some degree or another, you know, I wouldn't say predatory, but, you know, people that turn to religion do turn to religion at desperate points in their lives. You know, prisoners often turn to, you know, to devout forms of Christianity, you know, out of a sense of unbelievable helplessness or just needing to find some kind of salvation, right? And so in that sense, I don't take as much fault with that. What I take fault with is that, you know, they definitely do go for people's weaknesses, and then they suck you into some program where you're going to have to dole out a lot of money in order to really ascend the ranks. And the thing about the Church of Scientology is they'll claim, as they have many times, that you can go and be a Scientologist by reading a bunch of books and maybe going to a church service on Sundays, all of which are basically for free. That's absolutely wrong. Their goal, and it's preached by every member, is to climb this what they call the bridge to total freedom. It's this path to enlightenment. And, you know, the most exalted realm of which are called these OT levels. This after you reach the state of clear, you can become what they call an operating Satan, which means a person who is, you know, basically an enlightened being. And there are 8 stages of this enlightenment. And this is the goal. Tom Cruise is at the 7th stage of this level of enlightenment. There's only 8 stages, so he's almost there. Okay? I know people that reach that 7th stage of enlightenment, it costs them almost $500,000 and 30 years of their life.
And this is the goal
that is preached in the Church of Scientology. I'm very sorry, but that is definitely the goal.
Okay, so are they enlightened people? What do they bring to the table? What is enlightenment?
ATLK AM1150.com. I think you'll agree. We've got an impressive stream. LA's Progressive Talk, AM 1150. Your thoughts, your station. Progressive Talk, AM 1150.
And now he's 72 years old and can honestly tell you he's got a fuller head of hair than he did when he was 25 years old. Mark Maron!
What does that even mean? Welcome to the show. If you're just tuning in, you're just getting home, you're just getting in the car, I don't know. You're listening to Progressive Talk, AM 1150. I am Mark Maron. You can go to markmaron.com. That's MARCMARON.com. You can call us at 877-520-1150. I'm going to take some calls right now. But before I do, we're talking about Scientology. We just got off the phone with Janet Reitman. She's a journalist. She's got a new piece in the New Rolling Stone, Inside Scientology. And I got a pamphlet I picked up on Hollywood Boulevard right here for it. Can you fix the one thing that is really messing up your life? Yes, I can. Jim, get out. Now, but listen, man. Listen what Scientology says. Find out how the mind works, your mind's real potential, how to improve your relationships, how you can better understand and get along with others. Where does it say how I have an alien inside of me that's waiting to be picked up, that's lived millions of years? Where is that stuff on this paper? See, they suck you in with the self-help angle, Jimmy. They suck you in.
And they also, you know, screw up parking around that place, too.
Dude, that parking lot's always full. I can't understand. Let's take a call. I think these people have held on long enough. Barbara in Glendale, how are you? How are you?
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm okay. I'm no longer in Glendale, but I am okay.
You're on the move.
I am on the move. I'm in Monrovia now.
Okay.
I just wanted to make a little comment because my son actually attended a performing arts high school in La Cañada that was built as a performing arts high school and sold to me very expensively as a non-sectarian school. And it was only after he was in it that I realized it was actually 99% Scientologist. And when I confronted the administration about that, they absolutely denied it. But then I went up there to sort of teach for a while and found that, no, it was indeed 99% Scientologist. And it was a really intense experience because these people were so dysfunctional.
You must have felt like Rosemary and Rosemary's Baby.
Well, my child was one of three non-Scientologist children, and they were persecuted to the max.
Like how?
Well, when they had their religion classes and they learned about other religions, the kids were allowed to sit down and make fun of Jesus and make fun of Muhammad and make fun of us, but you couldn't say anything about L. Ron Hubbard, or they'd take you out in the, you know, playground
and put you in a box.
Practically. Plus, they were allowed, they were encouraged, actually they were required to monitor each other. All of the children, which is the scariest thing, were required to monitor each other. So if they saw you in school or out of school doing anything that wasn't Scientology approved, they were required to file what they called a KR, which was a knowledge report, and that went directly to the church. And then the children had to go to the church and do penance at the church for smoking, swearing, anything else that you might have
done.
That's
unbelievable. That's like totalitarian land.
The KR?
It's built into the system. It's not even something that they ask you to do. It is required that you do it for the betterment of your fellow students. So, like, you're doing it for their own good.
And yeah, so you're taught to rat people out. Yeah.
Yeah, from a very young age, it's part of the structure. It's built in.
That's a totalitarian structure.
Yeah. Now, and everything has its little nicknames and everything. There's this whole private language that you have to learn. It was very bizarre. So.
Now, how'd you get your kid out? I mean, did they ever alienate your kid from you?
Well, no, because my son has a very good sense of humor, so he found it quite entertaining, and so it was sort of a given that he wouldn't get along there very well because he would just say, "You guys are nuts! You guys are crazy! What are you talking about? You're absolutely nuts!"
But you did take him out of the school, Barbara.
Well, yes, I did take him out of the school.
Okay.
And it was a very easy thing to do. I had no problem doing it, but it was a remarkable experience in a lot of ways because I saw this thing from the inside. What they do to their children is extraordinary.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I appreciate your call. Okay, bye bye. Wow, that is mind-blowing, man. And she had a really good sense of humor about it. I'm glad the kid was sophisticated enough not to be damaged by them. Let's talk to Eric. Eric in Chino Hills. What's up, Eric?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You bet, man. What's on your mind?
Well, I got a cousin that has bipolar, and, you know, the word Scientology is in the name. It's science. And
that's what they say.
That's what they say. They lead you to believe it, and, you know, it's a medical disorder. It's chemically imbalanced. You have to take medicine for it, yet they don't allow it. So what are they going to turn this kid psycho?
Right.
What are they going to do?
Well, that's the weird thing about it. See, it's my belief that psychology, theology, and philosophy all seek to answer the same questions, and L. Ron Hubbard saw all of them outside of his own personal religion as enemies to his way of thinking and to what he needed to do. The reason they are anti-psychiatry is they don't want any of their people to think that they are victims. So what they do is they take the stand against psychiatry, saying that all psychological ailments are just, you know, can be overcome with your mind. It's your fault that your mind is not proper. We can teach you how to do that. It's part of their brainwashing. I do believe that many people who claim to be depressed might just be disappointed and unhappy, but people with extreme bipolar should definitely, you know, be on medication and taken care of properly.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot for your call, man.
Thank you.
You take care. Look, let's. I really appreciate your calls, and I certainly appreciate you know, you listen. 877-520-1150. I also appreciate everybody is up and blogging. All you people around the world who are streaming on KTLK, MarkMaron.com, all the old morning seditionists. Man, it is great to see you guys out there, and it really makes me feel supported and at home. And I'm glad you're having a good time. Susan in Burbank, what's on your mind?
Well, I hope that you're bringing Butch back.
We do got to bring Butch back.
And your dream diary as well.
Yeah, well, Butch was part of the dream diary, and I think we will, you know, because now that I'm living in the house here, and for those of you who don't know, I had a cat that passed away when I was doing my morning sedition program, and dead cat Butch. Yeah, and I missed the burial and everything else, and now, you know, Susan, I have these four other cats.
Oh, well, I hope you have someone that might be able to channel Butch.
Oh, well, no, we'll take care of it. We'll get a Butch thing going. So you got a Scientology thing?
Well, all I'm going to say is that the shortest sentence in the Bible is Jesus wept. Mm-hmm. So Jesus obviously had emotions. And if the Scientologists are telling their followers that, you know, emotion is a bad thing, then Jesus actually cried.
Yeah. So you're saying that I think they're pretty shamelessly anti-Jesus. I think they're pretty shamelessly anti-religion of any kind other than them.
Right. I'm just saying that if they're trying to cut off people's emotions, then they're trying to cut them off from what Jesus did, which was weep when it was appropriate.
Well, that's a very poetic way of looking at it. And I appreciate it.
And thank you, and welcome back to the West Coast. And
see, I feel like, are you right down the street?
Sort of.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling, Susan. Great talking to you.
All right.
You take care.
Welcome back.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
She was right. Jesus was nuts. Jesus was crazy. He was way over the top.
Weeping, you know, talking, saying the Son of God. So are we going to go into this? Boy, this is exciting. Isn't this exciting? Now, to help us sort out some of the latest developments and issues surrounding stem cell research, we have a very controversial guest, Sammy the Stem Cell. Welcome, Sammy.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sammy the Stem Cell.
So how are you, Sammy? Long time no see.
Oh, I know, man. Hey, Mark, I missed you.
Well, thanks, Sammy. It's nice of you to say that. You know, it's good to see you, too.
Ass face.
Excuse me?
Last place. Boston Bruins in last place. Can't believe that, can you?
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure you just called me ass face, but I'll let it go for now.
Whatever, you dumbass jerk hole.
Excuse me again, what was that?
Family Circle, very popular women's magazine. Interesting reading. Something wrong with your ears?
All right, okay, never mind. Let's just get into this. Now, Sammy, how do you feel about the mayor of New York giving $100 million of his own money for stem cell research?
I say bring it on. They can't touch me. Tom DeLay said I was Sacred Life. I'm like Jesus, only a little more popular and better with the chicks. You know, like Manson.
So wait, now I just want to get this straight. You have no objection to Bloomberg making a $100 million donation towards stem cell research?
Absolutely not. And speaking of which, I wouldn't mind if you made a, you know, like a $3 donation toward deodorant, if you know what I mean. You smell like cat piss.
Well, that's very rude, Sammy. You know it's not my fault. One of my cats had an accident on my backpack again.
No, that's what you get for practicing your act in front of animals.
Hey, look, it's got nothing to do with that, Sammy. They're feral cats.
Oh, great. Now you got to bring religion into this.
Look, I just want to make sure I got this right on you here. You have the power to cure little children of cancer, but you're against stem cell research.
All I'm saying, maybe all those little kids wouldn't have so much cancer if they weren't so bad. I mean, you create your own reality, right?
That's terrible, Sammy.
You're telling me. You realize how hard it is to find replacement kids at the Shanghai Nike plant at 3 a.m.? By the way, I did your wife.
You're disgusting.
And you're welcome.
You're not Sacred Life. You're just a monster, a repugnant mockery of nature.
Whatever gets you off, Shylock. Hey, you want some extra Kleenex and Vaseline while you finish up?
Get out of here. You make me sick.
Yeah, go blow it out your ass, nuts. You're just jealous because I hold a mirror up to society, just like Charlie did.
You.
You need me.
I hate you. Leave.
You, asshole. Manson loves you. Deal with it. And I'm going to go take a...
All right.
I got to eat me. They're cooked up to me. I'm a Scientologist, too.
That's very Scientology-oriented Sammy.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm into current events and stuff. Am I still on? What's going on?
We here at the Mark Maron Show want to make positive contributions to society, so every night we bestow an honor upon one distinguished citizen whose actions most closely represent those of our esteemed vice president. Without further ado, we present the Mark Maron Show Dick of the Day. That's right. An unnamed 12-year-old boy who on a field trip to the Detroit Institute of Arts stuck a wad of chewed Wrigley Extra Polar ice gum on Helen Frankenthaler's painting The Bay, which is an abstract painting from 1963. Now, folks, officials said the gum did not stick to the canvas, but it left a chemical residue that are not sure that they're going to be able to get it off. Now, they don't think any permanent damage was done to the painting, but a chemical residue. Now, that's a whole other issue, that this gum left a chemical residue. You know, what is that? All right? But, all right, so look, the kid was 12, so we've got to give him a little wiggle room here on what this impulse meant, all right, or what it could lead to. It could be that he thought he was adding to the painting. He's like, you know, why not? It's an abstract painting. Let's put a little gum on it. That looks right. Hey, could have been making his own subversive artistic statement. I don't know. The real concern is that it came from a disdain and lack of respect for that type of art, which could lead to Republican policy. All right, that's the point, okay? Charges were not pressed, and it was reported that he has been suspended from his charter school and disciplined by his parents, which could, I think, hasten either proclivity, whether it could go either way, artist or fascist. Time will tell. So congratulations, 12-year-old kid. You're the Mark Maron Show's Dick of the Day. Oh, there you go. So, Jim, you're back.
Yeah, I am.
That was weird, man.
I was in the, outside hall putting a Scientology patch on me.
Were you smacking Sammy around? For saying, hole? Yeah, I mean, sometimes, the beeps match up. Sometimes they don't. That's all right.
It's, that's live radio.
That is live radio. It's absolutely live radio.
I
said live radio.
Scientology.
Oh, man. So, Bush was in, he went to India today. Do you know that? He went to India today for a three-day visit. He's apparently focused on strengthening the emerging strategic partnership between India and the United States. And apparently there were like dozens of protests. There was one planned by the Islamic leaders. There was communist politicians. And actually some outsourced American protesters were there protesting.
That's an outrage.
They were outsourced outrage.
When is this outsourcing going to stop?
I know. Isn't it crazy when radical movements start outsourcing their protests? But on another level, they might not have made it there had not they not outsourced the protesters. Huh?
Did you outsource that joke?
Oh, man, I just tried to. Jim? It's like, I'm not going to let you. I'm not going to let you. Do you understand? We're going to do more jokes in a second. Do you understand? You're listening to Progressive Talk, AM 1150, and I thank you for it. We'll be back in a second with today's, what are they called now? The Short Order News. That's what it's called.
If you really believe Mark Maron is the one and true Christ, you won't want to miss his Short Order News coming up next. Amen. How to erase wrinkles in less than an hour. Mark Maron.
Oh, thank you, Jim. 54 past the hour. You're listening to Progressive Talk, AM 1150. We're coming to you out of Burbank, California, land of no seasons and the confident zombie people. I go on the blog for 2 seconds on the break. 2 seconds on the break, and this is what the post. They're all very excited. Now, Jim, they want to hear the myth of Sammy. They want to know how Sammy came back to life. They need to know. But here's the email. It's not an email. It's a blog post.
He's a stem cell.
Yeah.
He can come back whenever he wants.
Of course, but, we're here to make stories.
Perhaps
to create narratives
Sammy will explain.
P.W. McDonald commenting. It's a very different setup than we had back at the old studios. We don't have a booth. We don't have a million mics. He's coming to town soon, Dan Pashman. Our L.A. listeners might get to meet Dan Pashman.
Wow.
But before I get to the short order news here, here's the commenter. Like that matters to anybody, Dan Pashman.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, here, just a quick comment. Hello, I'm not a regular commenter or anything, just a happy listener who's incredibly thankful that Mark is back with his own show. And twice as happy that he's here in L.A. Hey, Mark, I'm assuming you still have your house in Highland Park. Eagle Rock says, hola. I'm going to go to South Dakota now and get knocked up. What the hell can that mean? I want to hear that story. Where the hell's that story? All right, let's do this. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. President Bush arrived in India today and was greeted by thousands of angry protesters. Protesters carried placards that read, "Bully Bush, go home. Death to America," and "The biting. Bush doesn't even know what the 7 degrees of egoism are in the Tamil Nadu." Saddam Hussein was back in court today asking the judge, "Where's the crime?" referring to the 148 Shiites he is on trial for having executed. And referring to his order to gas thousands of Kurds, Saddam went on to ask, "Hey, what's the big whoop? I mean, how many times have you guys thought about gassing a Kurd? What, am I alone on this one? You people look like I just dropped a turd in the punch bowl. Lighten up." You notice I didn't do it in the accent because I thought it was better just to... All right. According to a new study, only one in four Americans can name more than one of the five freedoms guaranteed by the First Amendment. And two out of the other three Americans thought the First Amendment was Kenny Rogers' old band. And that's Mark Maron's Short Order News for tonight. All right, people. What do we got tomorrow? Tomorrow, we got Mark Lazanti from the website Defamer. We got comedian Andy Kindler. That is going to be funny. I guarantee he's one of my favorite funny people. How funny is Andy Kindler?
I love him.
Lawton Smalls making his return to the Mark Maron world. Very excited to talk to Lawton. I miss him. I miss his crying. I miss everything about him. Andy Kindler, though. Tomorrow, Andy. I saw him a few nights ago. Hilarious. Good night, sheeple.